You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, brand builders. Have we got a show?
Sorry. Okay.
This is the ironic opening.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Nancy Duarte. Nancy is a communication expert who has been featured in Fortune, Forbes, Fast Company, Wired, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, LA Times, and on CNN. Her firm, Duarte Inc., is the global leader behind some of the most influential visual messages in business and culture. As a persuasion expert, she cracked the code for effectively incorporating story patterns into business communications. She's written 5 best-selling books, and 4 have won awards. Duarte Inc. is the largest design firm in Silicon Valley, as well as one of the top woman-owned businesses in the area. Nancy has won several awards for communications, entrepreneurship, and her success as a female executive. On the list of top 250 women in leadership, Duarte ranks number 67, and on World's Top 30 Communication Professionals for 2017, Duarte ranks number 1. She has been a speaker at conferences and a number of Fortune 500 companies and counts many among her firm's clientele. Her TEDx talk has over 1 million views. She speaks at business schools and has lectured at Stanford University several times. Nancy, welcome to On Brand. I'm so glad to have you here. I feel it feels somewhat ironic that the bio tripped me up when talking with someone who is ranked number 1 in communication professionals. So I will blame that.
I'm just ranked as a communication professional. It doesn't mean I'm a good communicator.
An important distinction. Well communicated. So you are someone that I find myself talking about a great deal, both professionally as an inspiration in terms of changing the way I present as a speaker. So if you've listening and have seen me speak, I owe a great deal to Nancy. I've read many of your books, seen you speak, but I had the privilege of being at a workshop that you did at South by Southwest 2-3 years ago. I can't remember when exactly.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Uh-huh. I've done a few, but I'm pretty sure I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's over in the AT&T building. Yeah,
it was. Funny. It's a hike over to the AT&T building. But it's funny because that was a year where it was very easy to answer. Everybody always asks the ROI of South by Southwest question. But for me, that was a very easy year to calculate it because having that time to hear you talk about slides and communication was pretty amazing.
Oh, that's cool. I had a team and I don't know. We really enjoy what we
So what you do is interesting. How do you describe if you're in a quick, you know, elevator ride with someone and they want to know what it is that you do? Well, what's your go-to explanation?
Well, see what I mean about communications? No. You know, there's so much power in the spoken word, and so many people spend hundreds of millions of dollars on ads and marketings to get clicks. Well, so many times you're putting all that energy to get the right people in the room for them to communicate with each other. So when it's really high stakes and you really need your message to stick, you're going to want want to have help shaping your story, having arresting visuals, and really making it actionable for your audience. And so that's what we do. So we write, we produce, and we help you deliver a talk, or we will teach you how to do it yourself. So we do both.
Impressive, impressive. I loved your point about story in story patterns in business communication. One of my favorite visuals when I'm now teaching about communication here at the University of Iowa are all of your plots of or plottings of great speeches and stories. I think we think of story arcs and we see a lot of classic literature, but I think seeing Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, the Steve Jobs iPhone announcement plotted that way really, really drives home that point.
Yeah, you know, that was a lot of work.
Bet.
I had gone on a journey through storytelling because I knew that the greatest speeches of all time had this kind of cadence and rhythm and this intrigue. And so I went on a 3-year journey through storytelling to try to figure out if there was any sort of story thinking and story principles that they were unknowingly using. And if I hadn't gone on that journey through storytelling, I might not have been able to identify the structural pattern that these great communicators used. And I spent a lot of time with Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. And then once I found the pattern, I started to analyze everyone. So the first one I wanted to do was Steve Jobs. And what a lot of people don't know is I'm not a digital native. I don't know Illustrator or Photoshop. That's what makes my people keep putting up there that I'm a graphic designer in my Wikipedia posting. It's like I have fantasies of being a graphic designer. I'm a good strategic thinker, but I have to be followed around by a graphic designer to make my stuff look good. So I actually had a physical like graph paper, and I wrote all the words that Steve Jobs said on graph paper, and it's about 40 feet long and it's small graph paper. So I actually physically analyzed it, had to scroll, you know, tape together this, I can unfurl this great big long piece of paper. And that's how I found the pattern. And then my my team went and made it pixel perfect to the time codes. So it was kind of fun, but it kind of mathematical yet spoken word. It's kind of weird.
That is the graph paper side of that. And again, I think it's because your outputs so often are very visual in nature. That's probably why, because I confess I even had it in my head that Nancy designs all of that. And
you know, I'm really communicate. I'm a visual communicator, but I just think my team, I've got some of the best designers in the world. Why would I spend my time doing it? But yeah, they definitely took all my sketches and scratchings and digitized it.
Well, the job speech in particular, now that is, since we're talking about something that folks might be interested in, that's a major centerpiece of, is it Resonate? Is that which?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which book of yours that folks can find that in?
Yeah. It's in Resonate. It's also featured in my TED Talk where I analyzed his speech. And what's interesting about Steve Jobs is he had this real crazy ability to make us feel. And part of storytelling is that you build tension and you release it, and then you build tension and release it. And you also physically react to storytelling, which is fascinating. Your eyes dilate, you get a chill down your spine, you laugh, you clap, you scream, you jump back, you lean forward. Like those are, you don't really control those. Those are physical reactions. What's interesting about him is people physically reacted to his content in 20-second increments. They would laugh, they would clap, they would squeal, it was just crazy. That is a lot of physical engagement with content. And then obviously he used this brilliant structure that, you know, amplifies contrast, and he was just really masterful at what he did. Really masterful.
Well, and that's what I was trying to remember, because I feel like I might have found that in one of your books and one of your works, was that the increments of time. I mean, and that is, you think about someone having a physical and emotional response that frequent. I mean, it's really kind of quantifies, beyond saying he was a really good speaker.
You know what's funny? I wouldn't call it a fetish, but I definitely have transcribed every talk, every recording, everything that Steve Jobs did. So we featured him in my last book, Illuminate, too, where I took the whole transformation that he did when he, for, it was a 6-year campaign to move people from Mac OS 9 to Mac OS 10. And that whole season was a massive communication strategy and a communication plan. And there was so much intention and so much insight and so many ways that he cut the same information to make it sound new again and make it sound alluring again. I just think he's a fascinating case study that we'll look at for a long time. So you look at someone who's just as innovative like Elon Musk or something, but he doesn't communicate as well. I just think he was a master communicator, and I think everyone should study, you know, what made him tick.
Well, it's impressive that you transcribed all of the speeches in looking at that in-depth view and with the set of eyes that you have. Did you notice anything change structurally in that time?
Oh, that's a super interesting question. Nobody's asked me that. Now, I'm pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that's different about Steve Jobs than other people was he, a lot of speeches have almost like an equal amount of what is, what could be. So that's kind of this structural contrast you use. Like, here's our current realities. Just imagine you owning an iPhone, you know, those kinds of, you know, oh, and here's how sucky BlackBerry looks right now. Oh my God, you too can be the proud owner of 1,000 songs in your pocket. Like, he used that kind of contrast all the time. But his speeches compared to everyone else, he has the highest sense of spending a lot more time on what could be. So he spends less time on the current realities and more time in what we would call this bright new hope of a future of what could be if you owned Apple products. I would say that's the difference, but depending on the speech, like he did one speech called when he was trying to get all of the Apple developers to move to Mac OS 10. It was called Apple's Hierarchy of Skepticism, and he was working so hard at moving the developers from a place of skepticism about moving to trying to get them to migrate to Mac OS 10. And I would say in that speech, he spent a whole lot more time doing a cautionary tale than he was doing about the hope. So he did modulate quite a bit, which is interesting.
Well, that's an interesting breakdown too of the what is, what could be, but the less time on the current and more painting the picture mm-hmm. of that future. I reconnected with you because I am teaching this business communication course, and I have what I call a Nancy Duarte deep cut, your HBR guide to persuasive presentations, which I'm using in the class, and was going through some persuasive writing assignments, and we've talked about what is, what could be. And one thing that's interesting was there were a few, when you have that waiting wrong of the current versus the future state, if you do spend a disproportionate amount of time on what's wrong today, it doesn't always go well.
Yeah, and you know, I do think there is time to do that. If you're needing to dystopian situation where things are really, really bad, if you miss, like, if you're painting a scene of how bad it is right now, and you miss some major category of how it's so bad, you will also lose your audience. Like, you have to be pretty honest about the current realities, and sometimes they're really bad. Or the other interesting things is I spent a lot of time looking at Eastern and Western storytelling structures. Asian storytelling structures, they spend a whole lot more time bringing the long history in. And that is what is. Like, what is doesn't just mean today, but it means all of the history that led up today is what is. And they actually spend almost the same disproportionate amount of time that Steve Jobs spends around what could be in Asian cultures and Asian stories and Asian speeches – They spend a disproportionate amount of time in what is, because it's very important. Their long history and long story is very important to them, and they're always bringing that forward to today's current realities. If you walked in and you had this heightened sense of what happy endings we want to hear about, how bright the future is, not all cultures are that way. So it is interesting how long you spend in each with, you know, sincerely thinking through each type of contrast. Yeah.
Well, that is interesting. I didn't even think of the cultural impact, which I think is probably such a big part of communication today, and modulating that appropriately when we're talking with folks from different places.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes all the way back into how the cultures told stories, you know. It goes all the way back to Western stories tend to be like this likable boy, he meets a girl, fights a dragon, and almost dies from the dragon, gets the girl, they kiss and live happily ever after. In an Asian-structured story, it would be like, boy meets a girl, fights the dragon killed him, don't be that boy. It's very different, like, you know, very different outcomes. And in Asian cultures, they're just heavily weighted towards cautionary tale versus happily ever after. So,
well, you talk about storytelling and kind of the tradition of storytelling, and I think there's some of these skills, communication skills specifically, that I feel like we have that are ingrained in us to be storytellers. It reminds me of a conversation with another mutual friend, Dan Rome, and
I love him.
He's great, and how he talks about drawing pictures. And I feel like there's some of these skills that we start out better at, and then we somehow storytelling, drawing, we grow up and we kind of set aside some of these skills that could really help us out.
Yeah, it you know, it's funny because so many people, like we just had a workshop yesterday, and I go in at the end to a Q&A, and this gal from a very large multinational company was like, I just wrote a presentation so much faster because I started with a pencil and paper. Like, she's just like, you know, when you start out in like slide making and stuff, you aren't thinking. And so she like had a format and she could write out exactly her talk and then went to her slides. And she goes, if this was my methodology, she's like, the amount of time I'm going to spend because I visually thought for, I was doing visual thinking before I was doing slide making was really dramatic. And so it's kind of funny how we default straight to these digital tools that don't facilitate creative thinking. They facilitate making. I'm going to make a slide, but there's nothing about our presentation tools that facilitate us to do some creative thinking, you know? So paper and pencil is still the best way.
Well, and instead of slide making, she was probably also focusing more on storytelling too.
Right, right, right.
Well, I do think that's hopefully one of my big takeaways with teaching is that I think when we talk about speaking and presenting, everybody's kind of gets, they're itching to get into slide mode. A few mm-hmm. lectures ahead of when I want to get into slide mode. And I think that, well, your slides are also going to be so much better if you know. It's an odd way to write. I feel like there's a metaphor you could use with driving. I mean, it's like somehow you're not looking at the road.
That's funny. You know, what we're finding, though, too, is there's different modalities for tools, presentation software. So, like, if I'm in a research mode, I want this place I can go and collect excerpts and collect, you know, links. And, you know, and I know there's, like, Evernote kind of does that. Mm-hmm. But what we're finding is a lot of people collect, curate, and create a lot more content than they're going to use in their talk. And so we let them just use the tool, just splatter your pictures, snap your images, and use it as a, almost like a data collection tool. But then you have to change your modality when you're actually going to take all your findings and communicate it. It's not an analytical, it's not a research thing, it's not a data collection thing. it's a creative thing, and you need to engage parts of your brain that you don't normally maybe on a day-to-day basis engage. And so we are finding that they use the tool in multiple ways. And so we give our clients permission to just dump everything into a presentation, dump all your thoughts, use the notes, put everything you want on a slide so we know what's in your head. And then they need to back up and be like, this is everything in my head. What do I need to communicate? And then completely change your modality when you need to communicate your ideas.
Well, because not every talk is a speaker standing in front of slides either. I mean, you've got a great breakdown. Also, I think it's a four quadrants of I'm trying to remember what it is. It's the setting and the formality and the
yeah, like kind of what's at stake, if it's internal or external, and if it's so on the left axis is an internal talk and the right axis is external. The top axis is formal and the bottom is informal. So if you're doing a formal external talk, that's very different than an informal internal talk, you know. So it's just different amounts of preparation that you may need to take, and a different type of talk and structure too.
So your work, which has been focused on communication, visuals, slides, story, how is your latest book, Illuminate, different?
You know what? Illuminate was actually the original concept I had for Resonate, which I believe that if a business was a protagonist in a story, do businesses follow a story plot? Do they rise and fall? You know, just all the typical story attributes. And that was my original premise for Resonate. And then I got sidetracked by this discovery I made with the presentation form. So I published that book. So my co-author, Patty, she started with my firm like the week Resonate came out practically. And I told her that. I said, well, I had this. My original idea was that, you know, businesses follow a story plot and you need to communicate along a story arc for this longer term movement. And she goes, oh, there's a book there. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to write it alone. You got to write it with me. So we spent about 4 years researching, and it is true. Like, we actually used the S curve of innovation as the, and broke it into the 5 story steps that you go through as you're driving toward a movement. And it was so fun. And we introduced some new vernacular. So your toolkit should have speeches, stories, which are different, and ceremonies. And because ceremonies are important because people don't know when one thing is ended and a new thing has begun. And when you're driving change or moving towards something like moving everyone from Mac OS 9 to Mac OS 10, you need to have these ceremonial moments where people know, oh, that's old and that's not us anymore. This other thing is new, kind of based in rites of passage. It's a communication device that's really, really important. So between speeches, stories, and ceremonies, we created this lovely book about how to drive change through using those tools at the right time. It's a great piece. I love that book.
Well, yeah, and I love, the idea of ceremonies, because I do think, you know, that's, we give a lot of attention to stories, but I think that if you think about brands that you're connected to, I mean, so many have these things that you could categorize as ceremonies that are very important rituals in that relationship.
Yeah. So we highlight a ton of ceremonies, like to kind of stick with the Mac OS 9 to Mac OS 10 theme. We Steve Jobs actually did a ceremony where he needed to make it very clear to the developers that they needed to move from 9 to 10. It's almost too late. And so what he did is he had a ceremony at a WWDC. And what he did is there was a coffin came up out from the stage with smoke, stained glass, and he walked out with an oversized box of Mac OS 9, put it in the coffin, closed the lid, put a red rose on top, and did a eulogy for Mac OS 9. Kind of a dramatic ceremony, but he made it very clear to the developers not that Mac OS 9 is dead. He actually called it dead. And what's very interesting to me, too, is that wasn't just a show thing. He never talked about macOS 9, he didn't ask the developers to move again because it was also dead to him. So he just didn't talk about it anymore. He had moved on to 9, to 10, and everyone else should have too. So that was kind of dramatic, but it needed to happen because the developers had not all finished moving over to 10. So all kinds of ceremonies that we featured in the book.
Yeah. Well, it's I love the dual purpose of it kind of serving, well, and just who these ceremonies are for, because it sounds like it also served a purpose for him as the business leader.
Yeah, it did. And I know people that were there too, and you can kind of hear a gasp and awkward laughter and stuff, but I talked to one of the developers that were there, and he goes, I'll never forget that as long as I live. He goes, because it was a real defining moment in strategy, you know. It does. And the development internally around 9 stopped. Like, you know, it stopped a lot of things. So I agree. It plays as big of a role in internal communication as it did with partners and developers and everyone. Yeah.
So the person that we were talking about that you were on the short elevator ride with at the beginning of the interview, and you explained what it is that you do. And then, instead of getting off at their floor, and apparently you decided to not get off also, and you're riding back down, and this person says, wow, that's a really complicated scenario. I should probably edit that a bit. But you're riding back down, and they say, I love what you do. I wish I could get better. What's one thing I could do differently?
I love that question. I would say it's understand empathy. Like, all of my body of work, I would say, has its roots in empathy because of my own quest for empathy. So I think what happens is when you're being asked to give a presentation, you're being asked to run a meeting, we immediately make it all about us. Oh, this is what I would like to convey. This is what I would like to say. This is what would make me excited to get up and present, instead of actually first thinking about, wait, who's in my audience? How do they process information? What am I asking them to do? Am I asking them to take a risk? Are they going to see the reward in what I'm asking them to do? Because we're asking them to do something. Like, you're asking them to change in some way. And to take a moment to think through that before you even create your content, I think, is a massive missed opportunity, is to actually put on the skin of your audience, look at life from their eyes, and just create really alluring content for them and not necessarily for yourself.
Awesome. That's so huge, because I think that too often we end up, you know, the opposite of that is making it about you, but then kind of giving these talks that really are just kind of about credentialing you and who you are, as opposed to what you're there, which is why I love
that. Right.
I love the point in persuasive presentations when you talk about, I love a good Star Wars reference. I like how you say that as speakers, we're not Luke, we're the Yoda.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, everyone is kind of focused on themselves all their life. And what's interesting is in myths and movie, a mentor shows up just as the protagonist has made a decision to possibly jump into the story. Oh, you know, I think I am going to jump in and try to fight the Death Star, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was right when, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi stepped in and gave Luke special magical skill that he didn't have, which is the Force. And that's what the presenter is. It's like, how do I come alongside the audience at this moment in time and help them get unstuck? Or what's my magical gift for them? How do I get tool. So it's about them making it through life in a very compelling way. It's not about me. It's about making it about them and giving them exactly what they needed for the moment in time for the story they're in, so that they have what they need to go kill the Death Star. Yeah, awesome. It's kind of cool.
Well, hard as it may be to believe, we are nearing the end of our time together, but I have to ask, what is a brand that has made you smile recently, Nancy?
Brand that has made me smile has got to be my Peloton bike. I love that thing. It's completely reshaped the shape of my butt cheeks. Can I say that on your podcast?
You can absolutely say that on the
awesome.
Podcast. We're a butt cheek friendly podcast, I guess.
I love this bike. It's unbelievable.
Well, this is a smilerific bike, because I feel like it's been mentioned mm-hmm. before as a brand that has made someone else smile as well. So
probably that, for the same reason, they just didn't admit why.
Exactly. Yes. It's all about the butt cheeks.
The butt cheeks.
Nancy, where can folks go to find out more about who you are and what you do?
Oh, that's cool. So they can go to Duarte.com, which is the website. My Twitter handle is at Nancy Duarte. The company Twitter handle is at Duarte. We have a Facebook page, blah, blah, blah. But I do connect to everyone who connects to me on LinkedIn. And so you can also find me there.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Nancy, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to talk to you, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Mike Gerholt gave us a shout-out on Twitter for our episode featuring Alan Alda and his work on communication. Thanks for listening, Mike. And if you like something on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. You can find links to everything at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.